from KMXT in Kodiak, this is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, the Yukon King return is weak again. Nushigat Kings are coming back small, while the market for Southeast salmon is looking up. All that and more coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Pebble Partnership, pursuing jobs and opportunities for Southwest Alaska. Find out more at pebblepartnership.com.
The first pulse of Yukon River king salmon is relatively weak. State Arctic Yukon Kuskokwim Regional Management Supervisor Dan Bergstrom says the Department of Fish and Game has been assessing the early run since the first pulse of kings began moving upriver last week.
So far, looking at the test fishery and pilot station sonar counts, it's looking a little better than 2007, 2008, and 2010, but still in that trend of poor, below average run.
The situation has resulted in fishing restrictions. The state pulled the first subsistence fishing period to allow the early Canada-bound kings upstream in an attempt to meet escapement goals and international salmon treaty obligations. The state also halved the length of the subsequent lower river fishing period from 36 to 18 hours. Bergstrom says the number of kings making it upstream will determine if the time restriction is also implemented in upriver fishing districts.
It's likely to, but we'll be looking at this, evaluating day to day as to what to do in the next districts as we move up.
While the Yukon King run is weak, Bergstrom says the summer chums are coming in strong. Says the chum run could total around 2 million fish, which would be the strongest in 4 years. Some new yet unpublished research suggests that king salmon returning to the Nushigak River are not only getting smaller, they're coming back at a younger age. KDLG's Mike Mason has the details.
The research is outlined in a yet-to-be-published paper titled Length and Age Trends of Chinook Salmon in the Nushigak River Related to Commercial and Recreational Fishery Selection and Exploitation. The report was written by Neela Kendall and Tom Quinn. Quinn's a professor with the University of Washington School of Aquatic and Fishery Sciences, and Kendall's a graduate student who has spent several summers studying salmon in Bristol Bay. Kendall says the trend towards smaller and younger Nushigak River king salmon is even more pronounced than the trend documented in Nushigak sockeye salmon, which was outlined in a recently published research paper. Kendall says the report related to Nushigak River kings is based on 30 years of data.
We have shown that we quantified selection by both the commercial fishery that mostly targets sockeye salmon and in the Nushigak district as a whole, and then also the recreational fishery on Nushigak Chinook salmon. We also quantified how many fish were caught by the subsistence fishery, but we don't have data on the actual sizes caught, so we can't measure if it's the subsistence fishery is size selective. But basically what we found was that the commercial fishery actually on average across a year catches smaller than average Chinook salmon, which is somewhat easy to understand because, again, this fishery is mostly targeting sockeye, so it's using mostly gear that's smaller mesh sizes will target the sockeye salmon over Chinook.
Between 1981 and 2009, the commercial fishery in Nushigak Bay caught about 73% of the kings harvested annually, compared to 9% by sport fishermen and 18% by subsistence fishermen. Kendall says sport fishermen seek out the larger kings.
The recreational fishery was highly selective towards and consistently selective towards the larger than average fish. This makes sense. People want to take the big fish home. This is somewhat concerning for the fishery managers that how to balance people catching large fish and wanting to come consistently year after year back to Bristol Bay to go after these big Chinook salmon.
The new research suggests that size selectivity by fishermen targeting Nushigak River kings could be at least partially responsible for the documented trend of smaller and younger kings on average, but a bigger factor is likely related to environmental changes affecting fish growth. Kendall says it could be unhealthy for the overall population if the larger kings are caught and prevented from spawning.
We need to be concerned because these fish that we catch, they're never going to reproduce. So if we catch the big fish, they're not going to be able to go on and, carry on, give their big genes to the next generation. And so if we're going to be catching all these big fish, there's a significant chance that we can change the population in the future towards becoming smaller.
The new research paper suggests that regulations that decrease the allowable size or the total number of large Chinook salmon harvested may help decrease the size selectivity of the Nooshiegak River recreational and subsistence fisheries. The research shows that the average length of both female and male Chinook salmon returning to spawn in the Nooshiegak River decreased significantly between 1981 and 2009, and the average ocean age of both sexes has also decreased significantly over time. The report indicates that female Chinook salmon have shrunk an average of 3.1 millimeters per year between 1981 and 2009, and males have shrunk an average of 2.6 millimeters. The new research paper notes that there are many other factors that could be impacting the overall health of the Nooshiegak River Chinook salmon, including ocean and freshwater conditions, interceptions by the massive pollock fishery in the Bering Sea, and competition with hatchery-released salmon while in the ocean. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is supported in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
Analysts are predicting strong markets for Southeast Alaska salmon catch this year, and fishermen in Petersburg are excited as the fishing season kicks into higher gear this month. Esme Joyce has more on the season's predictions.
The mood at South Harbor is frantic as fishermen put the finishing touches on their boats before heading out for the season. Tuning out the noise of a soldering iron in the background, Stuart Meeks talks excitedly about the summer.
Prediction's good. It's supposed to be a really good run of fish, and the price for all the fish were really good. Never seen prices like it before. Back in, like, when I was 15, 16, I think dogs were 33 cents a pound, and this year they're predicting like $1 a pound for dogs, and so it's quite a big difference. Should make some pretty good money this summer. I got high hopes.
Meek says the same boat he crews, the Harvester, is hoping to catch at least 1 million pounds of salmon this summer, mostly chums and pinks. Meek's hopes that will translate into a sizable crew share.
In the past, you know, most fishermen average 20 to 30 grand crew share. But this year, I don't know, it might be quite a bit more, 50, 60, so we're hoping.
The Alaska Department of Fish and Game has predicted an above-average southeast harvest of 55 million pink salmon this year. They're also predicting above-average harvests for sockeye, chum, and coho throughout the state, but slightly below average for Chinook. Tyson Fick, Communications Director at the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, or ASME, says that despite high prices, a number of factors could reduce the profit margin.
There's supposed to be a lot of fish this year, and that's going to have a downward pressure on the price. The commodity price is likely to go down as Chile comes back online, as Norway keeps producing more and more salmon. So, and then the price of oil, the price, you know, what it costs to go catch fish, what it costs to produce, to process fish, all are factors.
On the docks, the rising cost of fuel means more business for Jim Edson, who skippers the Kuprinoff, an Icicle Seafoods tender.
You know, the fuel prices are getting to where it's high enough that they're going to change people's behaviors instead of running to town for, they get a little extra money if they deliver in town, but everybody's got it calculated out to how many pounds they need to make it worthwhile running to town or not. So if the fishing's big, they'll probably still be running to town if they got a boat full, but if they just got a little dab and there's going to be a day off or 2 days off, they'll probably deliver on the grounds.
Saner Stuart Meek says delivering to the docks could bring his boat an additional 3 cents per pound, which translates to nearly $30,000 on 1 million pounds of fish. Even that might not be enough incentive.
We were pretty worried about diesel going up to $5 or whatever. And if it does that, you know, we probably won't be coming home as much and be hanging out on the grounds a lot more.
While fuel expenses will likely make a dent in a fisherman's profits, strong demand and a weak U.S. dollar are driving salmon prices up. As skipper Mark Roberts says, fishermen are feeling positive about the upcoming season.
The way the rumors are going around, we'll see if they come true or not. The way everybody's talking, if you don't break down this year, I think you're going to have a good season.
Processors are optimistic, too. Icicle Seafoods, the largest processor in Petersburg, modified its plant this winter to increase the volume of fish it can freeze. Another of Petersburg's large processors, Ocean Beauty, is reopening its cannery this year. The plant was shuttered last summer because of a weak run. Processor representatives did not return calls for comment on the season outlook. In Petersburg, I'm Esme Joyce.
Alaska wildlife troopers say two Yakutat men drowned after their 20-foot boat capsized. Another man in the commercial fishing party survived Monday's accident at the mouth of Dangerous River in Yakutat. Troopers identified the victims as 29-year-old Wayne Gray and 18-year-old Rex Newland. The survivor was 30-year-old Jonathan Pavlik. Troopers say Pavlik was able to climb atop his skiff and was spotted later by passing aircraft. Local residents rescued him. Gray and Newland were taken to the Yakutat Clinic, where troopers say they were pronounced dead.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
An innovative cleanup program hopes to corral 10,000 pounds of marine debris off fishing beaches around Kodiak Island this summer. The collaboration of SetNet fishermen, several local processors, and Kodiak's Island Trails Network plans to hit the beaches near fishing sites and have the debris hauled back to town by salmon tenders. KMXT's Maggie Wall has more.
The pilot SetNet beach cleanup is unique for a number of reasons, but Island Trails Executive Director Andy Schroeder offers two. It's all summer long, and it's money in the fishermen's pockets.
Instead of asking them to volunteer their time, a week or more of their time, to go out and spend a day picking it up with us, what we're asking fishermen to do is to go out and pick up the beaches on their own and fill the bags that we give them, to put those bags on a tender that's bound for Kodiak, and we'll receive them when they get to the dock, sort those materials and recycle them, and we weigh them and pay them 50 cents a pound for the marine debris that they deliver, just like it was a fish or any other commodity.
The Island Trails Network, ITN for short, works with volunteers to build and maintain trails around Kodiak Island. It also has a reputation for collecting a lot of trash. In fact, Schroeder says ITN has collected about 50,000 pounds of marine debris since 2008. He says he expects this year to be no exception.
I estimate we'll pick up about another 10,000 pounds using volunteers this summer. But if we want to get more than that, we have to be creative on how we, you know, there are only so many volunteers out there, only so many projects that ITN can pull off in the marine debris field. We have a lot of trails to do as well. So if we want bigger results, if we want to clean up more beaches, if we want to address the marine debris problem in a more serious way, we thought we should be creative about how we go about it in this sort of market-based approach where we pay a price per pound and treat it as a commodity seemed to make a lot of sense.
Funding for this summer's SetNet cleanup program comes from the Marine Conservation Alliance, which is a Juneau-based coalition of fishing interests, primarily harvesters, active in marine sustainability issues. I'm Maggie Wall.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
And that's all for this edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help this week from KUAC's Dan Bross in Fairbanks, KDLG's Mike Mason in Dillingham, KFSK's Esme Joyce in Petersburg, and KMXT's Maggie Wall in Kodiak. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.